Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Ren, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Here we are. Can you believe it? The final episode of this series of the Finally Pregnant podcast. What a series it's been, honestly. I didn't even know if it was going to happen last year, quite frankly, but I am so pleased that it has. And I want to say a massive thank you to all of you for your amazing feedback and for all the messages and shares this series has received. It really means so much to me, not to mention the nomination for Best Podcast, and let's see where that takes us as time goes on. I feel like so much has happened since the beginning of this series back in November, and it has been such a pleasure chatting to such a huge variety of wonderful guests, and I'm looking forward to even more of that in series four. I really am. And that series should launch, all being well, but you know, in the times we're living in right now, I don't want to make any promises, but it will launch, hopefully, in March. Make sure that you are subscribed so that you get a notification as soon as it goes live. And I'm going to drop it in the top, actually, now that I've said that. Please go and rate and review the podcast. I know you can only do it if you're on Apple, but if you are on Apple, please go and do it. It would be amazing to get 100 positive, hopefully, reviews over on Apple Podcasts. I'm 82, I think, 82 or 83. So, you know, you could make the difference. Right. Who knows, come March, where we will be, whether we'll be in lockdown or not, whether we will all have had the vaccine. Oh, I don't know. But I truly hope that we will be able to be hugging each other, because as it turns out, today is National Hug Day. So hugs are on my mind a lot. And while I'm talking about hugging, I've just done a post on Kat and Alice. Now, you may know that Alice and I have got an event. This goes out on the Wednesday and the event is on Saturday the 30th. So there is still time, if you are listening to this episode when it goes live, to nab a ticket. It is genuinely going to be the best day. It really is. Honestly, like, what we need right now is connection and friends and support and community and inspiration and singing and dancing and live music and a bit of comedy and some fertility royalty and just, oh, honestly, you can't miss it. I don't know how you can miss it. So head over to catandalice.com and buy yourself a ticket. As Alice says, there is a ticket for every budget. And there really is. There's one at £15, which is our no questions asked. If you need it, you grab it. And the actual price is £40. So if you can afford that, then it would be brilliant if you bought that ticket, because it just all helps to pay our speakers and that kind of thing. So yeah, Yes, I hadn't planned to talk about that, but it just kind of happened. I hope that's okay. Rather than Ren's update this week, I feel like this whole episode is a bit of a Strawbridge family update, to be honest. Many of you will know that we have one frozen embryo from the round that gave us Ren, and if COVID hadn't hit, I'd like to think that we would have transferred it last spring, summertime, maybe. But, you know, it did hit. So there's not an awful lot we can do about that. So we'll leave that there. But we are now facing the decision again about whether or not we're going to go ahead and try for a sibling for Ren, or whether we decide that too much has happened, we're too old, long in the tooth to go back to it all, that we want to focus all of our energy and time and effort and money and everything on Ren. Because I've said it before, if Ren is our world, it's a world that I am happy to live in. She is everything. But we've got that embryo there. So it is a big, big decision that we are having to make. And I know that lots of you are facing these kinds of decisions too. And when I shared this on Instagram about a recent post about pregnancy announcements and how I was feeling about them, the response was actually quite overwhelming. And I'm very conscious that I haven't gone back to everyone's comments on the post. I have read them all, and I will come back to you, or at least kind of like it so that you know that I have read it. But I have read all of them, I really have. And this is my kind of response, I guess, like trying to help to put more information out there about this kind of thing. So yeah, that's how I'm going to think about it, rather than feeling bad for not having got back to everyone. But anyway, I know that this conversation is so needed and so important. And whilst I don't think for a second that it's going to make a decision for me or for you, I think that there's a lot of counselling that needs to be had. I had a counselling session last year about this, although we kind of decided thereafter that we were going to make the decision in 2021, which is where we are now. So anyway, the chat that I am having today has been inspired by all of that. So by you, by me, by everything. And it's with a friend of mine from many years ago, as it happened. We talk about that in the chat. But many of you know her as the host of the Fertility Podcast. It is Natalie Silverman. She has a little boy, Phoenix, and he was born via IVF. And last year, Natalie and her husband came to the decision to not pursue having more children, and instead they donated their remaining three embryos. As Nat shares, this was a decision that took a long time. I think she said 18 months, and one that she admits herself she wasn't 100% sure about even when they did decide. It's so hard, isn't it? Like I said, I know some of you will be listening, perhaps for the first time to this podcast, because you are in this position yourself. And it might be because of COVID. It might be that you've been thinking about it for a while and you're looking for stories from other people to help you make your decision. Wherever you are in this story, I truly hope that our conversation helps in some way. And I will say, having caught up a few days after our chat, both Natalie and I confessed that it took quite a lot out of us and we were feeling pretty emotionally exhausted afterwards. So please do bear that in mind. Take it in, but give yourself a while to process it and download it. And, you know, just, yeah, be gentle with yourself if you're in the midst of this right now. I also want to share a few resources if you are in the midst of this right now that a wonderful friend of mine, Lucy, shared with me. Lucy has a triangle family, as she calls it, because let's face it, saying only does sound lonely. And also, Lucy told me about a Facebook group that I talk about in the episode, My First, My Last, My Everything, which is for people who have one child, either by choice or because, like many of us, that's how our fertility journeys happened. I'll be honest, I joined the group and one of the first posts I looked at, there was a lot of conversation about there being so much stigma about being an only child. And a lot of it came from people who were only children, and it really, it made me think, oh, immediately, I don't want Ren to grow up with that label. And it did kind of put me off a little bit, but it was just an instant reaction, I guess. And I think that I was just unlucky that I fell upon that post straight away, because they're looking through, there is a lot of other, like, much more positive chat as well. And it was just the way that I took that conversation, to be honest. They weren't saying that it was bad at all. But to balance, you know, my kind of somewhat negative reaction to that, I wanted to share a message from Lucy that she'd shared with me. And I have asked permission before sharing this, just to let you know. She said, I had a really tough time the other day when a friend said that she was sad about having two children because her husband said no to the third. And she said, I'm so sad that her two children won't benefit from having another sibling. And it really set me off. I actually straight out defended the joys and benefits of being one, and I felt a lot better. There are a lot of misconceptions about only children, and I'm super keen to change that narrative. Go you, Lucy. People with siblings can be lonely, which is definitely true. And people with siblings can be spoiled and are unable to share, because apparently these are the top two comments that Lucy gets when she says that she has one child. So after hearing Lucy say that, I am back on board again. Do you know what I mean? It's such a hard decision to make, but right, rather than carry on, because this has been, feels like, quite a long intro, I want to hand you over to our chat. But just before I do, I want to say once again how grateful I am for all of the support there is for this podcast and for the work that I do. The yoga sessions has been doing so well. I just love that space that's been created. We've had some wonderful new members in the Hangout recently, so I'm really excited to watching your pregnancy journeys grow, and also to those who have been with us a while and are due quite soon, I guess, over the coming weeks, and those who have had their little ones on. Honestly, it's just such a pleasure. It really is, to be part of all of your journeys, whether I know about it or not. So, yeah. Oh, I feel sad to say goodbye, but I'll be back. Like I said, subscribe. You'll know when. Or come and find me on Instagram. Okie dokes. Right. I'm going to go. I'm going to send you so much love, all of you, so much gratitude, and take care. Bye-bye. Hi there, Nat. How are you doing?
Yeah, good. Good. Lovely to see you.
Oh,
this is all we get to do these days, isn't it?
It
waving
is.
Waving through the screen.
But it's still nice. There's still something really nice about actually seeing
on.
Someone. Well, not specifically for this, okay? I put makeup on because I recorded my Every Story Matters panel this morning for our Live Your Life event, which I'm going to do a little plug for, although No, this should come out before then, which is on the 30th of January. I wasn't going to, but seeing as you just mentioned it.
I drew you into it.
So the makeup was for that rather than for you. Apologies. Oh, I know. I'm sorry about that. I have actually got
a little bit of mascara on.
Good. I can see it. I can confirm that
this
is the case.
This is the thing, when we don't leave the house, it's like, right, how much effort do we do? I mean, I do make a point of getting changed and washing, general hygiene, yeah. and then, you know, doing a bit of makeup. I was actually doing some videos, which is why I actually threw something on my face. And then you're like, right, yeah, actually, it does feel nice. We need to do these things, don't we?
Do you know what? Just while we're talking kind of COVID at the moment, during the period of time, maybe kind of September. No, do you know what? It was probably the November lockdown. I just wore joggers or lounge pants, you know, loungewear the whole time. And I really didn't realise how much it affected me. And then I got tonsillitis and I felt so much better after that. And since then, I have got dressed every single day. And it has made such a difference. It really, really has. So, yes. Get dressed.
Especially, I remember years back us having a whole clothes chat when you were doing, you know, all your clothesy stuff.
Yeah,
and it is really
yeah.
mood affecting, isn't it?
Oh, so. Massively, massively. And I guess that brings us. So we have known each other for quite some time, haven't we? Like,
yeah,
it's got to be 7, 8, 9 years pre-trying to conceive.
Definitely. Yeah, we met in a female kind of entrepreneur group.
We
in
did.
St. Albans.
If we yeah. did.
In
absolutely.
A pub. In a pub.
Oh, a pub. Oh. just taking that in. Right. But yeah, so we've known each other a while pre all of this trying to conceive stuff. And then we got back in touch, realised I came round to your flat, I remember, and you had a full range of herbal teas. And I was like, this is my kind of gal, because I was in the decaf, like all of that mode at that point. And then
tea cupboard.
Yeah, totally. And then that kind of led us onto the fact that you were also trying to conceive. And here we are now, both with our little miracles. Oh my gosh, I bet that we wish we had a crystal ball at that point. And we have both been through so much since then. And which I'd love you to kind of talk to us a little bit about in a moment. But specifically today, we're talking about the fact that you have your son, Phoenix, and you are kind of drawing a line under that. But before we go there, let's start from the beginning. Let's start from the beginning. So if you could tell us a bit about who you are, what you do, and your trying to conceive journey.
Well, as you say, we met a good while back when I was on the radio, which is what I used to be doing. And I, whilst was on the radio, realised that the trying to have a baby wasn't actually as straightforward as so many of us assumed, and then found out we needed to have treatment. And that finding out that you need to have treatment and having treatment in my world was quite a small period of time, in that my husband and I got married. I was already mid-30s. We talked about it before we got married, that having a family was a something that we were going to, you know, pretty much start doing once married. We were quite traditional in the sense that we didn't, you know, we got married first. And so the kind of onus on it not working was there from the start. It was very apparent. I was totally unaware of what was going on in my cycle. There's huge gaps in my knowledge that I've since learned. But then when we had the conversation, which was in 2013, of going and having tests and going and having, we had like a private MOT first before we had all the NHS tests. And we found out at Christmas, just before Christmas, actually, it was the 23rd of December in 2013, that we needed to have treatment and that we were eligible for funding, which was all, again, it was, 2013, seven, 8 years ago now. I again was unaware of what we now know with the postcode lottery, and how fortunate we were that we were also eligible for three rounds. And we had treatment and we had success first time. So that part of my experience of infertility was short. And it's something that I've always been a little bit dubious of talking about, knowing what I know with so many like you, Kat. But I also know that actually it's still relevant and valid in my world of what I've experienced and what it has and hasn't enabled and what it I've had to still deal with, which, you know, is no means, it shouldn't be kind of compared, really. And I think that's something that a lot of people within the community maybe get a bit caught up in. If they haven't had a really long journey, you can still struggle and have things to say about what you've been through. And we had treatment. I was still doing my radio job, and that was something that I've talked about a lot more since in light of how that experience was, because I still had to be very jolly and upbeat whilst going through what was still challenging and daunting and overwhelming. And we had Phoenix in 2015, and it was once I was pregnant that I launched the fertility podcast, because at the time I'd been playing around with podcasts. I'd been making various things for different people. I'd cycled to Amsterdam on a charity thing and made a podcast for a cycling magazine. And, you know, I was playing around with the audio because that was my world because I worked in radio, but I couldn't find something that was talking to me in the way that I wanted to know stuff about fertility. And so started the fertility podcast, because there weren't the brilliant array of podcasts that there are now then. And so I've been doing that for 7 years now. We're about to relaunch the podcast because there's so many episodes. We kind of tidying it all up and starting again, really, to make it really obvious what you need to know. And along the way, I've also shared that we have decided to not have further treatment. We had three frozen embryos, and I know that's what we're going to talk more about, but that process of that decision was something that has had a huge impact on my world in lots of different ways, most notably because never had to make a decision like that before. That I would say is the biggest decision that I've ever made in my life. And I'm saying I, obviously it was a joint decision with my husband and I, but I led it. And I felt that I really struggled with it more. And I still do. I still do to this day. I think it's something that I will always struggle with. The struggle gets easier, but it's a huge thing.
Oh, it almost makes me sad hearing that. I guess what I want you to say is, yeah, I made the decision, it was done. But it's I'm probably after this going to post something on my Instagram, which I talked about when I interviewed Mel, the stalk, and I, that episode. And it is, just because it's the right decision doesn't mean, you know, that it's not upsetting.
Well, someone said to me when I was going through the process of making the decision that I needed to be 100% sure. And I wasn't when I made the decision. I'll be really honest with you. I was 99.9%, but I wasn't 100%. And I'll be really open about that, because I don't think you can be, because you're always going to wander. It's inevitable. I'm not saying I regret the decision at all. I definitely feel, having made the decision, a weight has lifted. And so when I say that it's still a struggle, that's not to say I don't feel better having reached that decision, having worked through all of what it meant and processed all of what it meant, which by no means was rushed. And I think that what happens moving forward is, again, a process. But I wasn't 100%. So I think if you hear anything like that from anybody, because people are always obviously keen to advise, and you can read and you can talk and all that kind of thing, and you can search deep within as to how you feel. But I wasn't 100% certain. However, like I say, I needed to do this. I needed to move forward. And I, you know, we can talk more about what that's kind of then led to.
Yeah, it actually, now you explaining it like that, makes me feel better about potentially, you know. And just to put this in context with to anyone who is new to the podcast, I have a daughter, Ren, who is just wonderful, but after 7 years of trying, and that has resulted in us being, now I'm 42, we've spent over, we worked out, we're in a £250,000 deficit financially, which I'm sure finances are going to come into decisions. Like, these are all the things in our head as well. COVID has definitely delayed the option of, so we've got one frozen transfer. I, in my head, that was going to happen last summer, and because of COVID, it didn't. And we are facing the decision. We keep having conversations about the fact that we need to have conversations about and make the decision around what we're going to do with that embryo. And for so many people, or for some people, should I say, it's, well, of course you do it. Like, why wouldn't you? You know, absolutely. Just give it a go. Just, you know, how could you not? And, but it's a much bigger conversation with that. And one of the things I have hugely admired from you, Nat, is the fact that you have talked about this so openly, which is why you're here today. So if you can, I guess, like, tell us about the process. Tell us why it wasn't just, let's just try it. You know, in a way, and this is silly, I know, because if I was in a different situation, I would think that that was easier, perhaps. Or, but because we've got one, I think, how can we just leave that one? And I think if I had three, I'd probably be more comfortable. But I know that I wouldn't. I know that there just isn't any comparison there at all, is there? It's just we've each got our own situations. But talk to us about not trying one or two, or what, you know, just have one round and see if it works. Talk to us about that.
It's funny, isn't it, the number that you have in the freezer being so significant, when we know that people don't even get, you know, to that point. And so knowing that not everybody gets to have frozen embryos, to me, was the first thing. I was just like, how could we not? You know, we've got them, and that's what made us hold on to them. And I think for the first couple of years, we were so caught up in, you know, having become parents. And then we, like, our jobs were very involved. We relocated. There was all sorts of changes that were going on. And I was seeing, because of being, you know, in the community, people that I know had maybe got pregnant through treatment around the same time as me go for a second. And, you know, to be totally honest, it wasn't like we had a conversation of, right, and then when's the next one? What are we going to do next? We just kind of got head down and carried on with our lives. And I don't know whether that was to the detriment of what then happened, because time passed very quickly. And before we knew it, a couple of years had gone by, and the storage that you get as part of, you know, your funding goes, and then the letters come. And if you don't know, and you're not at this place with your storage, once you've had a certain time through, if you've had funded treatment, then you have to ultimately pay for treatment. And we did for a couple of years. And then after a couple of years, I just started to be like, this is a chunk of money that we're paying for something that we haven't at all talked about what we're going to do with. That was the first kind of thing. And it was kind of me dealing with that. My husband wasn't even, I think, getting the letters. He was probably, I don't know if he really was aware that we talked about it each time it came. And he kind of was like, what do you want? And again, we weren't really pushing through, where are we going with this? And I think that was too hard. So we were just in our bubble of what it was. And like I say, we relocated. And to be totally like honest, as I have been with this, and I know, and I've had comments from people about it, it was a real financial decision. And we haven't spent the kind of money that, you know, you've had to spend on treatment, but we haven't bought a house yet, and our careers have changed, and my husband's been out of work through various stages, and it's meant that I've been the kind of main breadwinner with the work that I do. And not that I wouldn't be able to do my work having a second baby, because I did with Phoenix, but it potentially put a lot of potential pressure on me. And so that came into the conversation of, what does that mean? And so we started to talk about not having any more children, and I found it exceptionally hard, and was talking with like a best friend of mine who was like, why don't you just go for it? She'd had one. I don't think she's now expecting her third. This is like my oldest friend in time. And another friend of mine was like, you know, if you got pregnant naturally, you'd just cope, wouldn't you? And yes, we would have just coped. Yes, of course we would. But that wasn't the conversation. The conversation was that we were choosing to potentially spend money on treatment for it not to then potentially work. Because at this point, I was very much more aware of the lack of success with treatment. And I was older, even though our embryos were 36. But I didn't know any of that when we had treatment. I was very naive. I kept myself very closed away from a lot of the community. And I was, in all honesty, was extremely nervous about, because I, you know, now work as a coach, helping people with their own mental health. And I've spoken to so many people in bits, and I just couldn't get my head around why I'd do that to myself, potentially. So there was all of that awareness in the kind of thought process. And then there was the conversation that we'd have about, look at what we could do, the three of us. Look at what that could mean for us, and look at where that puts us in terms of just opportunity in all different ways. And so I knew I needed more support and sought out guidance and counselling. And implications counselling is what you'd be kind of advised to have. And I started having implications counselling through my clinic. And what was really interesting in that conversation was to start to think about what the options were. Could I have a natural cycle that, you know, wasn't as expensive? And then what would that look like? And when we were having those kind of conversations, in my heart of hearts, I wasn't there. I wasn't closing my eyes and thinking of us imagining a second child. I was closing my eyes and imagining us in our amazing house that, you know, we want to build. Or, and that's another thing that people are talking about is, you know, when you go deep in, what is it you really see? And so there was a lot of realizations in myself of what actually I felt that I wanted. And I don't know if that's something that we always allow ourselves to talk about, especially when we struggle to conceive, and especially when society talks about one child kind of being bad and the guilt attached to it. And there was all these types of things. And I've had a lot of conversations with friends who have one child and friends who are, don't have siblings. And I'm purposely not saying only, because I don't like it. I don't like how it makes me feel, and I don't like how it sounds. And, you know, you'll know I've talked about this in the different things I've done in like the work I've done with Ferring and what have you. I feel really strongly about that narrative. And I think that there's a lot of work that needs to be done in how we talk about this, both ourselves when we're talking with friends, but also the assumption, you know, that a child that doesn't have siblings is going to struggle. And, you know, I'm one of three, and my husband is one of three. And so we both only know that. And so there was a huge amount of guilt, but ultimately we had to make the decision with our heads, not our hearts. And that's how we made it. Like I say, I had a good 18 months worth of conversations with professionals. I was also qualifying in my own coaching work, so learning a lot about how to process my emotions and how to understand what they were telling me, and learning about predominantly things like acceptance and also what this decision would enable us to do.
Oh, it's a lot, isn't it? I feel like this is a sad, well, maybe for me it feels like a sad conversation, but it isn't. And one of the things, and again, going back to the conversation I had with Mel, because we did touch upon this at the end, and her being a solo mum, and you know, the decision whether or not she was going to try for a second. And she said how when she coaches people who are thinking about becoming a solo mum, and it's the same thing here, I think, it's about focusing on what you have got and what is happening rather than on what could happen or might happen, you know, and really focusing on. And I know that, you know, something I say is, if Ren is our world, then it is a world that I am so happy to live in. Like, she is everything. But there is this wonder, isn't there? And with that, as you talk about, you know, the guilt of not giving them a sibling. I'm one of four. All of my sisters have got two children. So even with Ren's cousins, you know, and on Bob's side as well, his sister's got two daughters. And so Ren not having that same sibling setup, I guess, it's just, there's so much, isn't there? I agree with the only child narrative. And actually, a lovely friend of mine, Lucy, who will be listening to this, who has a daughter, Neve, sent me through a few bits and pieces. And one of the things that she said was exactly that, how she defended the only child conversation. So someone had, was, I won't go into the whole story, but basically they had said about only child, and Lucy had really defended it, and she felt really, really good about that. And she talked about a triangle family, which I quite liked the idea of.
I like that.
Yeah, it's nice. And also in French, and excuse my attempted French
Yeah.
accent here, but un enfant unique,
Yeah.
yeah, which
Yeah.
is lovely as well. And there is, I'm going to say it now, I probably will have said this in the preamble as well, there is a Facebook group called My One, My Only, My Everything,
Okay.
which and that is for people. And some people, by all accounts, I've only just joined it myself, but some people, by all accounts, I think they're all are the parents of only children. Some have made the decision, and I've just done it, haven't I? Only children. Some are have one child by choice, and some have one child because they couldn't have any more for different reasons. Now, you talk about like money, and it, that's, you know, we all need to talk about it. It's a practical, you know, thing in life. And we think about it from the point of view of we could give Ren everything. And like, our starting point for everything isn't great because of the financial situation we got in because of treatment. And like, we were lucky because we were given some money for it. I still think I owe that back to my dad. But anyway, shh. But you know, we took time out of work, and that's where the kind of deficit comes into. It was actually £40,000 that we spent on treatment. And looking forward to maybe having a frozen embryo transfer, you know, that is £2,000. And I haven't even thought about it, I guess, from the point of view of like that being a chunk of money that we would spend on something that wouldn't work. I think about that from an emotional point of view, as, you know, because I just think it's so unfair that we're not thinking, are we going to have another child? We're thinking, are we going to have treatment? And then we need to face whether or not it actually works. So there is that extra hurdle, isn't there? But at the moment, financially, what we can earn, what we have the potential to earn, all of that could be channeled to Ren. And that could make, you know, such a difference to her life, to our holidays, to maybe our house, to just her schooling, you know, to so many things, to the after school clubs that she goes to. But then it's such a balance, isn't it? Because I think, but you could have all of that, or you could have a sibling. And how special that is. Although I know that all siblings don't get on, you know, it's
Exactly.
just a
Yeah.
constant. So talk to us about that.
Somebody said to me the other day when they were having this conversation with their partner had said to them, "Why survive when we could thrive?" Talking about having another child. And there's that, as we were talking about, in that mix of what your life looks like and what it enables you to do as an individual and as a wife, as a daughter, as a sibling, and all those other things, as well as a mother. And I think that we get so caught up in our identity when we're trying to conceive of what that means of going through treatment, having more treatment. And like you're saying, you were thinking about the treatment working, not the next, the future and all that kind of thing. And I kind of had to take myself forward. I had to take myself forward into what it would enable me. You know, I run my own business. A lot of the onus has been on me for the different things I do. What will it enable me to do? And I could see these different opportunities that I was really excited about. And yes, there's an element where you could say, well, that's really selfish of you. You know, you've had this child and what about their sibling? But I think that for my mental health and for my husband's mental health and, you know, the mental health aspect of it all hasn't been, you know, great for the pair of us for various reasons. The impact on our relationship together has been significant, you know, because of this treatment. I said that the journey was short, but that didn't take away from the impact of having to have treatment, of what that's meant to us as a couple. And I think being in a position to think about all these different things gives you this responsibility to really look at then what that looks like. And in an ideal world, in a parallel universe, Phoenix would have had a sibling. You know, I can say that hand on heart, but that's not where I am. And so that whole acceptance, and I have to say that when we got a cat, you know, during lockdown, and we talked about how she's our fur baby and, you know, she's the fourth member of the family. And I had pets as children, but totally underestimated how amazing a presence of a fur baby would be in our world. And Phoenix adores her. And, you know, there have been the conversations, especially we've been going through a really difficult year with the pandemic and schools were closed and we were in Manchester. We had much more kind of restrictions in place earlier than a lot of other people in the north of the country. And, you know, schools were out and there were conversations that we had, inevitable conversations where he'd tell me that I'd be working too much or that daddy was working too much or they weren't playing or that it was boring at home and he wanted to see that person and that person. And, you know, you'd speak to people that had more than one child and they'd say, yeah, the kids play together, it's much easier. And you'd feel dreadful. Yet at the same time, nothing is going to change. And so it's then how do we deal with that conversation? And we talked it through and I've explained now, you know, it's brought me to have that conversation with Phoenix about the fact that he's not going to have a brother or a sister, but he's got a fur baby sister. And we talk about, you know, that. And then he'll talk about how he doesn't like babies anyway. And so, you know, children, as we know, are so accepting of things. And I think if there's a fear element of that conversation with your child, that's something that you need to just trust yourself in, that you will be able to have those conversations. And like I mentioned before, that whole acceptance piece, as you work through the grief and the guilt, because there is grief. You know, when my best friend that I mentioned, who I had that chat with a while back about, oh, you know, just have both of the two friends that have said, you know, you'd cope, what have you, they've both got three children now. One's had a fertility struggle, the other hasn't. But the one that hasn't has only recently, she's just about to have her third. And she's the same age as me, you know, I'm 43. And I thought I'd come to the end of pregnancy announcements. And I know you mentioned you had one the other day. And I think when you get into your 40s, you kind of think you might be through them. So they're even almost harder. And I've just had an NCT friend, you know, I've still got that group. Still, I've just had another NCT friend say they've had their third. So within my NCT group, everybody's got more than one child bar one friend. And I haven't had that conversation with her as to whether she's going to have another. We may. I feel like I want to, because I think if I'm the one last man standing, that will be another blow. And I'm kind of preparing myself. But I think that's a part of this as well, is that if you are reaching this decision of stopping treatment, what comes with that work is, like I talked about the counselling, but it's also preparing yourself for there to be these triggers, but you can prepare yourself for them and you can put up the boundaries and you can take yourself out of certain areas, you know, within the TTC community that might be triggering, because I know it is. And I've had to stop following people who maybe were having further treatment when I'd watched them go through various phases. That's okay.
Yeah, it is. I had a conversation with someone about that just today, funnily enough. Pardon me if I'm being selfish, but I guess these are thoughts that you've probably had and processed and been through. The idea of having that frozen transfer, because from our point of view, like, there isn't any more IVF. There's no more fresh IVF. Like, we are both drawn a line under that. And yeah, that is a decision already made. But this one frozen embryo.
Yeah.
And the idea of going into that round of treatment, like, we are happy now, you know, like, we're in a pandemic. I am trying to make a business work. Bob brings the money in and does a very stressful job, you know, so happy within the realms of normal life. but I do, because I know a lot that goes on within the trying to conceive community and baby loss community, you know, I think, like, first of all, there's the whole going through treatment, and it would be shorter because it's just a transfer, but going through treatment whilst looking after a little one and, you know, the hormones and things that you might be taking and all that kind of thing, I feel like that for us would be okay and manageable. I'm not so worried about that. It's the, what if something went wrong? What if you got pregnant? Like, not getting pregnant is something, you know, to deal with in itself. And, you know, falling back on the fact that we have got Ren 100% would make that so much easier. And a little, I know this sounds like a really terrible thing to say, and I do feel, I'm like thinking, oh my God, am I actually going to say this on a public forum? But I am. Like, if that happened, I feel like I could deal with that. And it's like, we've tried and it didn't work. Ren's our world. Brilliant. But, you know, at least I would feel like I tried. What if we got pregnant and then I was talking to James on the Every Story Matters panel today, and I have got friends who have been through this, who have had to have a termination for medical reasons. What if, and I, again, I know lots of people, sadly, because of the baby loss community, some in my hangout and other places, people have been through a stillbirth. Elle from Feathering the Empty Nest, who's been one of my guests, she lost a baby, you know, 3 days after he was born. Like, why would I even consider the potential of bringing this heartache to my door, especially when I am a mum to Ren, you know? And I just have a lot of, like, were these thoughts that you processed too?
I haven't experienced a loss, so I haven't gone through that thought process really. I have, in that I've thought about it when I've heard of, when I've talked about other friends that have gone through it, or I've, you know, had conversations again on my podcast about it. But having not had personal experience of it, it's not been my lived experience. And there's an element of our tendency to catastrophize the future, and catastrophize is a really big word, but it's a really poignant word in this context of when you've been through a loss, you're going to go there because that's what you know has happened. And I think when you're thinking about treatment, you've got to protect yourself from going there, because that's not going to serve you in any way. And ultimately, you know, we know how powerful the mind-body connection is when we're trying to conceive. And so being in the present, in the now, rather than what could happen is, and that might sound naive, but there's just no point in you going there if you're at this stage, because you're talking about this want to know if you're going to go through with this treatment. And I think that's as far as you can go, because you thinking about that being a possibility isn't going to change the outcome. You're not going to make it or stop it happening. So there's just no point in your emotions going over there. And so I didn't from personal experience, but also I was very much trying to work through what it meant for me to have the treatment. And I think if my partner had said, let's just do it, we would have done it. But he didn't say that. And I couldn't just make this decision on my own. And I've had conversations with other women who have said that that's their partner who just isn't really feeling it. And I think you've got to respect what your family is. And if we would have both been on the same page, we wouldn't be having this conversation, but we weren't, is the God's honest truth, Kat. You know, I think I had to really respect him in this decision. And, you know, that put a lot more pressure on me and a lot of sadness, you know, in me. And I had to really work on what that, with the counselor as well, what that might look in the future. And my husband and I talked about that as well. He said to me, I don't want you to resent me for this either. And we talked it through, and I had to really weigh up, you know, honestly, if he did it for me and we had another child, then what might that relationship be like if he was always that little bit resentful that my time was even more taken up with these two children? Not that he's not involved, but it is much more me and my relationship. And I had to really factor all of that in. And everybody's relationship's different. And, you know, I've read posts of people going, ah, oh, such and such, he was desperate for me to have another, you know, friends in that have conceived naturally. Oh, he couldn't wait for us to have another one. And, you know, I've had to search deep, because that's not my experience. I didn't have my husband going, I can't wait for us to have number two. So that's a harsh reality of this, which I haven't, you know, really talked about before. But that's kind of where it was. It was very honest, frank conversations between the pair of us. And I had to respect, you know, where we were in the mix. So I think what you were talking about bringing the heartache to your door, I don't think you can go there if you're gonna, you know, continue with treatment because of what you know. You know, you've been through so much and you've got to take it a day at a time and really work on as much as you can protecting yourself each day rather than dwell, because that's not going to serve you.
Yeah, I think that that is really good advice. And it's not always possible, but I think it's about checking yourself, isn't it? And like thinking about mindfulness and like not letting your mind go off there, but actually thinking about, right, this is about whether or not I'm going to have the treatment, not about what ifs or, yeah, I think that that's a really, really sound piece of advice. You talk there about, you know, potential resentment. And I think there is a bit of a mirror with our relationship that there's much more of me that would say, yeah, sod it, let's just do it, you know, and worry about the consequences kind of financially and other things later. We're different individuals. Bob's much more, you know, safety, security, likes kind of that kind of view of life. But that resentment could go both ways, because not doing it, like as you have, which is an incredibly, you know, mature and well-rounded decision, you know, that you have made within the kind of the remit of your relationship and your family going forward. But equally, I do think exactly the same as you, is if we did go ahead and, well, A, if something had gone wrong, but obviously we know now that I'm just going to try and not think about that. But yeah, if we can't buy a nicer house, if we can't go on the holidays, if we can't give them the lessons and the bits and pieces, like, you know, is there going to be that resentment towards having had two? And I don't think it would be against, you know, at the children. I don't think anyone would really do that necessarily. I think it is within, you know, a couple's relationship. And that is definitely something. And it's a thought process that I've been, you know, having. It's about our relationship within this as well. You know, as a couple, you know, we met, gosh, I think it's 13 years ago this April. You know, we had a lot of years together, just the two of us. And we had got to a place where we thought it was just going to be the two of us. You know, we were accepting of that and knew that we would have happiness within our lives for sure. And then I feel greedy because I think, oh my gosh, well, I've got one. And why am I greedily like trying to get the second? And I'm sorry if this is turning into a bit of a counseling session for me, but I know that other people, you know, think this and say this. And, you know, is it, am I being greedy? Am I pushing my luck? All of those different things. It's just, yeah, it's just, oh, it's such a difficult decision. Go on.
The thing is, so much comes down to what we held in our hearts of what we thought life and family would be, because, you know, we grew up thinking that you meet the person and you have the family and you have however many kids, you know, you've grown up in a family with siblings. And so that whole realization of this bereavement of what you're having is so big, because it's so unfair. And it's not greed, you know, it's not fair that you even have to work all this through because your friend just had babies naturally, and why them not me, and all those why them not me things continue through all of this. You know, even now with me, when I had Phoenix say to me the other day that I wasn't any fun and I didn't play enough games with him, and I was just like, I don't want to, I'm no good at Lego. Like, I'm just no good at, I can put things together, but I'm not creative with Lego. I'm equally not good at building a train track. And not that we're giving him gender specific toys, but he's inherited them from people. My husband will sit and happily build Lego together, and they'll build the train stuff, and I find it really funny that I just have no interest in it. You know, I'm creative in all different ways and we'll do crafty stuff and all sorts of things. And Phoenix gave me this real guilt trip, and I felt really rubbish. And I was thinking, oh man, if, you know, if there was another kid here, they could happily build this together. And then I was like, lockdown, you know, this is so unfair, and why me? And I did have this whole thing. And then I stopped myself, and he'd forgotten 5 minutes later even what he said. And we talked about it, and he said, I didn't mean that. And, you know, what one thing that I think that I take pride on is what I'm teaching him about what it means to be our family as three. And we talk about that. And we talked about the kind of narrative that society puts and the guilt that kind of comes with it. And I think that if you are in this place where you just, the idea of further treatment doesn't sit comfortably with you, because I think, to be honest, from our conversation, Kat, you're still very much not decided and still need to work a lot more on it. And I really, really can't stress enough that you can't rush this decision. I mean, I'm talking nearly 2 years. And in fact, a lady I was talking to yesterday about working together on this decision, she was saying that she had her last transfer about the time that I was making the decision to post the letter to donate our embryos to science. And she was like, I wish I knew. And I said, but I wasn't, I talked openly about it a bit that I was trying to get to this point, but I was very lost and I was very consumed in it. And I don't think my husband had any idea of how consumed I was in it. I was thinking about it every single day. And, you know, now, like going back to that place, I can, you know, I can feel that emotion coming up because I couldn't get past it. And I needed to for myself, for my, I suppose, business, because the one thing that I told myself was that if I wasn't going to have another child, then I wanted to do more with my business and my work. And that was going to be my other baby. And that was kind of how I was viewing things anyway, whilst I was making this decision. If I was employed by somebody, I also think that this decision would have been very, I've been self-employed. I've had my own business for like 8-9 years now. I've only very briefly been employed by someone. And that responsibility of what I do and try to do, it is like a child. And I think that if, you know, you're listening to this and that's where you are, you will relate. And Kat, I know it's a new kind of thing in your world. And it's a huge thing to try and be an entrepreneur and to try and, especially when we're trying to do work in this particular community that is never ending, in all fairness, because of the scale of how we are all affected by this. It can go in so many different ways. And, you know, I know and I've seen from the work that you do and the work that you're doing with Alice, you know, it's gone in all sorts of different ways that you probably never imagined. And that then becomes this other part of your family, really, and another part of something that you never knew meant so much to you. But when you've lived what you've lived through, and it is a part of you, and I'm not saying it defines you, because I don't think that we should let our infertility define us, but we can't help that it does refine who we become. And with all of these different elements, I think when you're weighing up what the future looks like, you've got to look as to what you want it to be. And, you know, if you're doing that kind of work about your goals with your work or a legacy that you might want to leave, whatever that looks like, either personally or professionally, you've got to add it all up together. And I think it becomes much more connected when you work for yourself and you've been through this. And I think then what that means to your one child, because I have, and I showed you that little post-it note that I had from Phoenix that said work is not important, because I have to explain to him that work is what enables us to do things. And that doesn't mean that I don't want to do this thing with him. But, and I know every parent will have to do that. I'm not setting myself aside for being, you know, running my own business doing that. But I hope that it then sets him in a really good place to understand more about the world. I didn't grow up thinking that. You know, my parents worked and that's what they did. That's what grown-ups did. I didn't really understand what that meant. And so I suppose what I'm trying to say is that with all of this processing that goes on, this enabling of what we can do and this acceptance of what it means in the big picture is how I've worked my way through it. And, you know, it still affects me when you said about having this conversation, and I've written a few blogs about it lately, and I had to take myself off before we had the chat, and I was just like, think about it. I was going to kind of come into this chat just not thinking about it, because I wasn't worried about talking about it with you. But I stopped myself and I, you know, I thought about what I wanted to get across, because I think it is really important. And like you saying, like I get whenever I talk about it, this is something that people feel isn't talked about enough. And I think that's really sad. I think it's really sad that we feel ashamed and guilty that we might only have one child. And I don't want that to be the case for me. And I don't want it to be the case for you if it is. And I don't want it to be the case for anybody listening. I don't want to feel inferior. I don't want to feel guilty. And I don't want to feel like I've done wrong by my son, because he's a brilliant little boy. And I will continue to try and give him all that I can, because that's what it's going to be. You know, if you have further treatment and it works, you'll manage. And plenty of people that have more than one child and they haven't had fertility treatment, or even if they have, you manage, because we all do. We can handle it, we manage. But I think when it's down to you to make the decision, it's just a different conversation.
Yeah, like honestly, all the way through that, I'm just nodding and nodding and nodding and nodding. I really am. It makes me think a couple of points, really. Again, from the conversation that I had this morning for the Every Story Matters panel, one of our panelists said how she hadn't, we talked about secondary infertility, or the fact that when you have fertility treatment, you quite often, and this isn't everyone, but this is based off an episode that I did with Good Luck Nick, she's already planning number two, and like the fact that they're going to have treatment for number two, because she is, because her tubes are blocked. So, you know, physically she is going to have treatment for number two. She's pregnant with number one, but she's already planning that. And I don't think I ever necessarily planned it, but through this conversation this morning, one of the panelists said, you know, I just want one child. I just want one healthy child. That's all I want. And when she said it, I did feel a bit guilty, but not so much the guilt. It was more about the fact I remember vividly being in that position. And then I think to myself, not how am I not happy, but like, how do I, why do I want more? And you talking about, you know, it's unfair. And I do talk about it, you know, am I stomping my foot thinking, because, and again, as you mentioned, because I had this image growing up of, you know, you get married, you have babies, it's more than one and all of this, that kind of thing, you know, like, am I just stomping my foot because it's not going to look like what I thought it was going to look like? Or do I actually want another baby? And I don't know the answer to that is the truth right now. I really don't. And I think possibly, well, if I knew it was me stomping my foot, that would, like, that would be the end of the conversation, quite frankly, you know, as far as our decision's concerned. I think I would probably, you know, make the decision and that would be done. But I don't know. And I really don't know. And I don't know whether me thinking it's me stomping my foot is because I'm feeling guilty and feeling, you know, that I might be being greedy, that I, you know, it's just, it's so complex, isn't it? Can I just ask you a couple of other things, like your age? Or my age, I suppose, because we're similar ages.
Our age. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm 42. I thought this transfer was going to happen last summer. And like, me and Bob hadn't decided. It was basically, that's how I had planned it in my head. Ultimately, we were going to have Ren's birthday and then we were going to transfer the embryo and it was all going to be great. And I was 41 at that point. Realistically, it's not going to happen, you know, until a few months' time if we did do it. So I would be 42, heading very quickly to 43. And if I was pregnant, then I would have been 43. And all of that kind of scares me a little bit, being pregnant older, even though I do know people who are older and pregnant.
How old are your embryos?
They're 39.
Right.
Yeah.
Because obviously it's, you know, as we know, it's the embryo age.
Oh, no, but I mean like physically my body and playing with Ren and then having a newborn and the idea of going back to the restless nights, because I find when Ren is awake now in the middle of the night, I find that harder than I remember. And obviously it's a memory, not actually being there, but then I remember it being when she was a newborn, because I guess that's all I knew. And, but now we've had some good nights. And so I suppose, I don't know. But
so what I had to do was I had to put myself in the place of holding a newborn. I had to put myself amongst the friends. I had some friends that had had, this is last year, not last year, the year before, because obviously last year, we know, but I posted the letter last February. So it's like literally coming up to a year that I've been living with this decision. But before that, there were friends that had babies and I made myself see, I wanted to know how it felt, because if I'd be in a group of friends and somebody had the baby and they'd be like, oh, it makes me feel so broody. For a while, I couldn't hold anybody else's baby whilst I was very much in this decision-making process. But then I said to myself, you need to know really what this is. And I know it's obviously not your baby, it's someone else's, but we know the effect it can have on us. And so I did. I pushed myself to hold other people's babies. And was quite astounded that actually I wasn't getting that pang. And I was like, oh my God. And it was quite kind of significantly groundbreaking for me in that I was like, okay, I'm not, like, it was lovely. And don't get me wrong, there were some pangs of the fun of dressing up babies and stuff. But also I had a very like friend, like Jiminy Cricket conscious on that side going, isn't it nice that we can just sit whilst they're playing and we've not got a baby attached to us. And I think you need that kind of reality check when you're processing all of this. So if you can, you know, almost act it out is one thing that I did. I also had somebody say to me, like I touched on before, about closing your eyes and seeing what the future looked like, and is there another baby? And I did that whole visualization piece quite a lot, and there wasn't. And I had to really listen to this stuff and trust it, I think, because it was all I knew that I could do. I needed to, like, I remember being in the park, and there was a group of us, and everybody was having like a glass of Prosecco. It was all very nice, you know, when you used to do those lovely spontaneous things. And I was holding this friend's baby. I wasn't drunk. I'm not being irresponsible. I had him for a little while. I had him on my hip, like I used to have Phoenix, and I was wandering around, and I went to tend to Phoenix, and I was really trying to reenact how it felt. And it was fine, but it made me think, oh, I'm happy to. The fact that I felt happy to give her baby back said to me that actually I am comfortable in this decision. And that didn't also sit well with me for quite a while, because I assumed I'd have more than one child. And I, you know, the friends of mine that have got more than one child, I have such respect for them, because I actually don't know how I would cope. I don't know how I would cope, because I feel like I am at my max being as efficient and productive and organized as I can be. So I think that's the harsh lesson with this, is you have to push yourself out of your comfort zone with some of those things to really answer that question.
What you mentioned there about putting yourselves in positions, I went to Nebworth a few months ago. It must have been over the summer when lockdown restrictions were lifted a bit. And as I've said, my sisters have all got little ones. So there are six cousins for Wren on that side. Wren was just turned a year. She wasn't walking, so she couldn't really get out into the park and everything. All of them can. The next one is 7 months older than Wren, and she was walking at that point. And I actually left quite upset that day. And the outing was cut short from my point of view. I left because I was really upset. And the reason I was upset was because, and I haven't really talked about this, I meant to, but it just didn't happen, was because I felt really left out. And that really surprised me, because I had always felt left out because I was the one that didn't have children. But actually, I had a child and I still felt left out. And the reason I felt left out in that specific situation, although actually it has happened on other occasions with my family as well, is because I was the only one with a baby, you know. All of theirs were running around and looking after each other and, you know, having fun on the bouncy castle at parties and all of that kind of thing. And I was the only one who was kind of tied to a baby, like, albeit wantingly. But yeah, like, so I felt really left out, and I felt really upset, and I felt, and it's not their place to do it, you know, like, we need to kind of work on our own feelings. People can't read minds. I probably should have spoken to them rather than kind of leaving upset, but I just felt like I was on my own, even in a crowd of people. And I think that was the Instagram post I was going to put up at the time, funnily enough. But the idea of doing that again to myself, like you saying it, you know, do I want to put myself there? However, I am in a village where there are, actually, as it turns out, I don't even know how this happened, because before there were no children, but where I've got a group of friends now, a lovely group of people who have all got children in and around Wren's age. And two of them are pregnant now with their seconds. The other one has got two already. And I think, am I going to be left out in that group if, and it could be that group, we might move, it might be elsewhere, etc. But if it's Wren and if it's one child, and I guess the answer is, we're always going to be left out of something, aren't we? We're always going to be different in some way.
Well, I think this enabling is what needs to kind of come in this. You need to think about what you're going to be enabled to do with what things look like now, rather than we're kind of catastrophizing again into the future. It's fine. It's natural, because you talked about age before. And one thing that I've experienced is, and I hadn't really thought about it at all, is that I'm quite a bit older than the school mums. And that whole school mum thing, you know, I've relocated, I've moved to a new city, and everyone's like, you know, and I left my NCT friends and I moved away from most people I know that had kids at the same age as me to put Phoenix in school. And obviously the whole school experience has been messed up with the pandemic. But I was very much like, okay, I'm going to make friends. And there's an age difference there that I hadn't really thought about because I was that bit older. I hadn't even thought about it. And I was on a play date with one of the mums and we were chatting and she said how old she was. She was like 12 years younger than me. And luckily, I don't think I look my age. And I was like, how old do you think I am? And she was like 36. I'm like, yes, brilliant. You know, and not that that matters. But then Phoenix told me that somebody asked him how old his mummy was. And he told them that his mummy was 40 something. And that person told him that his mummy was old. And I was mortified. I mean, he was like, so I said, well, let's just tell people that I'm this age. And so we had a little joke that he'd tell people a different age. You know, so there's those types of weird triggers that then happen. And I think the more you can think about this enabling piece with all of this, rather than the what ifs, and it's really interesting you're talking about that feeling left out. And, you know, there are all these different stages where you'll always feel like you feel a bit different, I suppose. But I just can't stress enough. It's the way that I've got through this, that what is our life going to be? Am I, you know, we're going to be able to get him a brilliant new bike for his next birthday because I only have to get him one, not two or three. And I'm not wanting to spoil him, but I just, that's a win. And so I'll have that rather than, but I could have had I could be doing this all again. I think that you've got to protect yourself with the different looking forward and back through this particular decision because it's pretty unique, you know, and it's so complicated from what you've described in terms of the what ifs of having the treatment and the what could happen, that the getting to the point of having the baby then is a whole nother area. So yeah, I just think age wise my friend who's 43 and about to have a baby is pretty fit and she looks amazing and she said she's pretty fine. I mean, she's about to have a third cesarean. It was quite fascinating having a conversation. I had a natural birth. Having a conversation with someone who's never gone into labour, I was just dumbfounded by it. That she was like, that's the one thing I'm worried about. It's totally a different world that my friend is in. I think as far as age and, you know, the things like I said, how you feel at school, my husband had said about not wanting to be 50 and, you know, still doing the primary school thing. There's those types of considerations. The lady I spoke to the other day was saying a similar thing that her husband was saying, you know, because if we're talking like a 5-year gap, so by the time your kid is at secondary school, you're still going to the primary school thing. And so there's that reality check, I think, that comes into it. But I just think when it comes to making this decision of not having further treatment, you've got to give yourself plenty of time. You've got to really seek support in it and really work through your feelings and understand them and know that they're all valid and that they're all kind of guiding you to take an action. You know, like I was saying, when I put myself amongst the baby, I knew that I needed to really understand what this feeling was and whether it was actually a real maternal thing. Or then if it wasn't, what did that mean? Well, it's okay if I want to really put my head into what my work and stuff looks like. So it has to be looked at differently, this decision, than maybe anything that you've ever looked at before. And like I said at the start, it's the hardest decision I've ever made.
Yeah. And I feel like that's where we're going to kind of wrap up this conversation, even though, well, I feel like we could just talk on and on and on. Sincere apologies if this has been quite self-indulgent from my point of view, and I have kind of brought out things that I have been thinking about and talking about and my experiences. Like, I hope that I have done that because I hear it echoed from other people in my DMs and bits and pieces. So I hope that it actually hasn't been too self-indulgent, even though I feel a little bit.
I don't think it's been self-indulgent from your part, in that it's much better to talk openly about this from a realistic point of view in order to help other people try. And you're only sharing what you're feeling, and I can only share what I've experienced, and hopefully having walked the path as all this stuff that we're doing, having walked the path, that slightly being slightly ahead on that path, I just hope that, you know, that thought process can kind of help things a bit.
Yeah. Oh, without question, like, whatever the decision, it will definitely help. And also, and like, this goes back to my Every Story Matters thing, it helps me in my life, you know, and my interaction with other people who might have one child or might be thinking about, you know, kind of calling it at one child. And so it's a hugely valuable conversation, whatever the outcome of my own personal situation. And I know that it will have helped so many people who are listening. It just, yeah, it's big, isn't it?
I want to add one other thing that you kind of learn this when you're trying anyway, in that kind of that stockpile answer. But I think it's really important to factor it in when you're thinking about it. If you are only going to have one child, or you're nervous about those kind of conversations, because people do say, only the one, are you done? Aren't you having any more? And as you know, as I mentioned, the thing I did with Fairing Up, I was challenged on that conversation. And there was a brilliant thing that I read that was, I think it was the author Anita Diamante talking about how she stopped at perfection. You know, her child is perfect and she stopped at perfection. And I really like that as well. So I think that's another thing to, you know, to take on board, to think about what you want your response to be, rather than feeling under pressure and guilty if somebody does ask you if you're having any more, because you shouldn't.
Yeah, absolutely. Brilliant. Thank you so much, Natalie. I really, really appreciate you taking the time, first of all, but just being so honest and open with this conversation. It's amazing. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye.